The views and opinions expressed on this are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning and welcome to a Friday edition of Analysis, an end of the week edition of Analysis here on your NPR station, WTJX FM 93.1. And it's a beautiful day in paradise here. I'm trying to figure out one of the issues that we're dealing with. And we got a great show today. We got Bush T lined up on from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. And then we got Dusty Cook joining us from Global Medevac from 9 a.m. To 10 a.m. We're having a technical issue here. Right now, I can't hear anything. I don't know what it is, but hopefully. We're supposed to get Dwayne Henry, supposed to be joining, but I can't hear him. I don't have anything, any kind of connectivity going on with me right now. So, and I know we're going to try to work this out, right? But we got a number of different issues we plan to talk about, but for some reason I can't hear anything inside here. I do want to say hopefully we could make this work, but there's nothing. Something is up here. I don't know what it is. But, I can't hear anything. I mean, I don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure out what the problem is. I can't hear anything. And all of the headphones. That one's out. There we go. I think we found the problem. There we go. Okay, we're good now. Yeah, we're good. Thank you. But I wasn't hearing anything. I used another headphone. I couldn't hear anything as well. So there we go. Now we are very much in effect. And I believe we got Dwayne Henry on the line already. Counselor, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, you're dealing with a gremlin. Dealing with a gremlin there. Yeah, everything is good. Everything is good. Beautiful weather, man.
Yes, I've been up since like 15 and... so I watched the sunrise come up and everything, and it's a beautiful morning. I went outside. I was outside just walking along in the yard for a little while, just so.
We had a beautiful day. We had a morning shower as well. You know, these are the quick ones just to keep your eyes a morning blessing on your way for the weekend. We spoke with the weather service yesterday. It should remain pretty much the same throughout the weekend, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we should be going into if it stays, you know, this weather extends, it should be a beautiful Easter next weekend.
Yeah, and you know the camping, right? Camping.
Yeah, that's why I said that.
Kicking in again. Yeah.
So I'm sure people already know. They know.
Oh yeah. And they actually stay beyond Christmas too. Some of them know. That I guess are comfortable up there. They stay there right on set. We get until Carnival. Yeah. So the end of the month. So that's good. Number of different topics that we're looking at. Around this time, locally and nationally. So, first thing first, let me talk about this scandal with the Dodgers pitcher, the great Otani, right? And this has happened before, right? Where apparently people in your camp that you entrust, right, do things. Somebody said I walk close when they thought I might have to sing this morning. No. We good. apparently his translator, whom he entrusted and it was like family, got himself caught up in some stuff about 3 years ago, and significant gambling debts with an illegal bookie in California. Apparently sports betting is not legal in the biggest state, in the most populous state in the country. That's crazy.
Apparently not. Like with all the horse racing and all the sports teams.
Yeah, yeah.
They got more sports teams than any other state.
Yeah.
Professional sports.
Well, horse racing is legal there. Matter of fact, they actually, but they got a bigger issue in California. We're going to touch on that in a little bit. Yeah. But I'm shocked that sports betting.
They don't have OTB, in other words.
Yeah. They don't
you
have.
To go to the track.
Yeah. Their situation. What happens in California is the Native Americans, right? They have a lot of casinos in California.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to do any kind of gambling expansion in California, the casinos, they spend that money to protect their market share.
That's what I'm saying. You got what you
did. Yeah, man. Yeah. So California is struggling, at least where horse racing is concerned, struggling with other circuits. Because the major circuits are Louisiana, to a lesser extent, but Florida, Kentucky, and New York, right? And even Kentucky, as red as it is, right? And evangelical, quote unquote, whatever that means, because Trump actually redefining what evangelicalism reflecting now, right? They have something called historical racing, right? Which in effect is casinos, is devices. You know what I'm saying? And and they raise their money left and right, so that allows for them to compete with the other states that have racinos. California don't have racinos, so the only revenue the tracks have is betting through simulcasting and on the track activity. So it was interesting, you know, when I read that you got 42 states got sports betting or something like that. And California ain't one of them. So I was like, wow, the most populous state, 40 million people, and they ain't tapping into that market that has blown up over the last 6 to 8 years.
They figure rather than have the people gamble it off, leave it for their taxes, because, you know, California is talking with some taxes.
Oh, yes, they're good with taxes. So in this case, his translator got caught up and started betting on everything except baseball. That's what he said. That's what he said, right? And and now they come to. So he was saying that he told Otani what happened. Otani covered his debt for $500,000 payments for $1 million. So they come to find out now that the debt was actually $4.5 million. And then Otani find out after the fact, wait a minute, somebody tap into my account and pay off the rest of this thing. I mean, wow, that's crazy.
Well, I think it's crazy because when it first broke, right, Otani voluntarily and on his own said, oh, I gave him the money to pay off his gambling debt.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next day or several hours later, he changed it to, no, the guy stole the money from me.
Yeah.
That's why this is more of a scandal, because the original story, when it first broke, Otani was like, oh, this isn't a big deal. I gave him some money to take care of his gambling debt, like he was helping out his friend. Then when they realized, again, to me, this is my assessment, when Otani's team realized, oh, wait a minute, that's not a position we should be taking, that you encourage your best friend, to gamble on sports. So they have to change it to say, no, Otani didn't help him at all. And that this was theft.
Mm-hmm. They can't say
that the attorneys for him have not said how he stole the money.
Well, apparently the story changed when Otani found out what the total amount was. Right?
It looks
like Otani knew of $1 million, right? But when he hear, apparently when Otani heard, wait a minute, $4.5 million, he actually went to another translator, right? Remember now, he got another star player from the Pacific Rim on the team, right? And that translator told him, yeah, the number is $4.5 million, and that's why they changed it from paying off a debt to massive theft. That's the term they're using. Looks like we may have lost Louis Henry there. Yeah, that whole thing changed. Let me see. Alabama, Alaska, California. I'm running through the way name now. Florida situation is complicated because of something to do with the Seminole tribe. Georgia, Hawaii, and Idaho. Literally, everybody else is in on this thing. Minnesota, not legal yet. Missouri, not legal, but legislation proposed. And then legal kind of for New Mexico. And we see North Dakota, not legal, but legislation proposed. Oklahoma, legal, not launched yet. It's interesting how this whole thing has developed. I think he's back on the line. Yeah. So you're right from the standpoint that they had to start playing some politics to protect the image, right? Mm-hmm. But it looks like this thing, this thing has more.
Here's the thing, right? If he sold for how? Nope. This guy is an interpreter where he has access to his bank accounts. The money was done by wire transfers. Yeah. Who did those transfers?
No, I agree with that.
Who initiated those transfers?
I agree with that. You know what I'm saying?
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This guy is his interpreter. He said if he was his accountant or business manager, that would have been a totally believable story.
But that's what I'm trying to say.
He has a lot of holes in it.
Of course it does. But then again, we don't know the level of desperate. But don't forget to know.
Transfer that money. And if you think if I went to the bank to transfer $100,000 to Neville Jean,
mm-hmm.
and then you come afterwards and say, well, he transferred $450,000. I said, no, I only transferred $100,000. Where mm-hmm. you get the $400,000? How do you prove that I initiated? They haven't said that, you know, and it's very easy to do who initiated a transfer. The bank will just show you the document
mm-hmm.
with the signature. So how come they haven't said he went to the bank on this date and initiated?
No.
I haven't heard those things.
No. He had no went to the bank involved here. Apparently,
they said it was wire transfers.
Listen
that's
to
what
me.
I mean by went to the bank. Listen, it could have been done online.
That's what I'm saying. So here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying, right? We speculating now, you know, right? Because we hearing changing stories, changing versions every 4 or 5 hours. What I'm saying is, if Otani, right, was in support of paying off up to $1 million, right, and the entire debt was $4.5 million, and that was paid. The question is, how did the other $3.5 million get paid?
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Who did that?
Right.
If it's $450 million, who did the rest?
4.5 million. Yeah.
Right. 4.5.
Yeah.
Right. Who did the other 3.5?
That's what I'm saying. So Otani them now claiming.
You can't no, ain't no bank in the world. No, I do all my banking online. I have USA and things. Don't even have branches. There's no way in the world they're gonna let me transfer more than $1,500 to $3,000 online. Absolutely. For $3.5 million, that would take going into the bank. Trust me. Any bank that allows that money, that sizable amount of money to be transferred, unless you're an established governmental agency or something like that, are you doing it? And even then, I'm pretty sure they got things to make sure that. Now, of this transfer, you know, you see $400 million or $4.5 million being moved out of individual's account.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me,
mm-hmm.
the bank is good. The fraud departments.
Okay.
The fact my oldest brother recently had his bank account shut down and he got his social security because of fraudulent activity. You know, they saw amounts coming out of the account.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they thought it was a thing of elder abuse or something.
No,
so they shut down his account.
But
he was visiting here at the time.
The point that I'm making, right, is that of the $4.5 million, Otani's at the Dodgers, and Otani at this point are saying
a million.
Are saying that's it, right? So they are implying somebody accessed the account, right, and pay off the other $3.5 million, right?
That's what I get that too. But my point is
No. Let me finish here.
What are the physics of that?
Let me finish here. Right, the size of the two payments, right, were $500,000 each.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if they continue to make payments in that amount, right, that means you're looking at what, 7 more payments for right $3.5 million, right?
Which would. Mm-hmm.
If they see
who is this money going to? Trust me, fraud department gonna kick in.
But hey, that's what I'm trying to tell you. We need to know the frequency of these payments, right?
There you go.
Check what I'm saying.
What happened, or was it transferred one time, 3.5 million?
Clearly, it wasn't 3.5. It looked like it was 7 or 8 other more payments. Because when the lady who broke the story for ESPN, I think her name is Tish Thompson, was breaking it down yesterday, right? That's what she said. More payments were made. So they're trying to imply, and this is a point I wanted to get to, they have been hacking involved, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's what they claim. We don't know, you know, man. Remember, this is all speculation, or no? Right? So we'll see how it works. We'll see how it works because it flies in the face of how Otani really is, because I'm going to tell you why, right?
Mm-hmm.
The contract that he signed with the Dodgers, right, for $40 million a year for 10 years, right? He deferred 380 of that $400 million until after his career done. He only paid $2 million a year, right?
Right.
He ain't sung like somebody who won his $40 million so he could enter, he could engage into this type of gambling behavior. You follow what I'm saying?
You know what I believe happened?
Yeah.
But you know, it's still speculation. I believe the dude had the gambling debt. And Otani is the partner. He just tried to help out his partner. Then he realized in America, you can't do them kind of thing. If they were back in South Korea, he did this won't be a problem. Because people will say, okay, that's his good friend. He had gambling debt. He helped it out. But in a sense, without puritanical hypocrisy, we gonna say, he encouraging gambling and all this kind of nonsense. It doesn't look good from a PR point standpoint. So that's why they have to change the story. They realize, oh God, we can't go with this story. We're gonna get beat up in the press.
Well, that's an image issue that the Dodgers and Otani, Dodgers and the Otani people are concerned about. That's why the story changed from what we heard originally to where it is now. And I wanted to bet they're going to change multiple times in the near future.
My nephew just sent me a correction. It's from Japan, not South Korea.
Yeah, Japan. Correct. Correct. No. The reason why he said South Korea is because they're playing in South Korea right now. They're playing the Padres. Right. That's where they started their season. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the deadlines for Trump on Monday. Very, very important issue there. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With 2 locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
You know a good story when you hear it. Makes you feel, laugh, think. Sometimes you get a little teary. I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday, and each week we bring you stories from around the country and around the world. Stories that help you learn, make you smile, catch you by surprise. Please join us every Saturday for the news you need and the stories you won't forget.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on Analyze This. And I got Dwayne Henry on for some which this morning. A number of different topics we're touching on. You know, yesterday, good morning, Dwayne. Glad to have you on this morning.
Good morning, again, yes.
Yesterday, I had on Jessica Samuel, and we were talking via history, right? So I had mentioned conversations that I had with Clement White, right? Back in 2011 when he was here, his brother was swearing in for the last time, his 11th term. So I finally met him, and you know, I went into student mode, even though I was a senator at the time, because I heard he was a professor. So yesterday, right, I was talking with one of his former students who was a guest on my show. She's a poet. She writes poetry or writes books, Miss Elaine Jacobs. So I hooked up a three-way call, right? I hooked up a three-way call with myself, her, and Clement White. So I was talking to him. I said, "Yo, man, I was telling Ms. Jacobs that I was talking about you this morning." He said, "Man, I don't get that already at 9:45. One of my people in Fancy Thomas text me to let me know that they're talking about me and the radio." So I said to myself, wow.
The war,
had to hold that. You check what I'm saying? So he said, "Hold on, I'm going to tell you the exact time." And he said, 9:45 when I get a text message. You check. I want to thank the audience because, you know, they really make me look good, make us look good while we hosting the show. You know what I'm saying? Having said that, right, this matter former President Trump, where he has a Monday deadline, right, to post this $464 million ban if he wants his appeal to go forward. Explain the process there, because he posted the ban for the E. Jean Carroll ruling, which was, I believe, $83 or $91 million, whatever it was, right? Because I think it's ban plus interest. That's how it works. Not just the ban, not just the dollar figure alone.
It has to cover the interest.
Right. Good. So in this case, the original amount was, I believe, $355 or something like that. But with interest, he has to pony up, right? A ban on his $464 million judgment, so they've included interest as it is already. We're 72 hours away from the deadline. How does that work?
You got to click.
Well, you know, I do the math, you know. Once 24 hours is what we're talking about. Just give me the days and I could knock that out quick. You know what I mean? So how does that work? It's a civil case, first of all, not a criminal case, right?
Right. And in criminal cases, you can appeal basically as of right.
Yeah.
In civil cases where a judgment was issued by the trial court, to prevent people just appealing frivolously and denying the prevailing party immediate access to their money, the court requires, in almost every jurisdiction and the federal level, they require the issue, the procuring of a bond, which is just an insurance company. It's an insurance policy saying that if whatever happens, they will pay, you know, this judgment if you were to lose. So insurance companies this, who they're going to bond based on, of course, the credit worthiness of the person, but also in a case like this, the likelihood that they will prevail.
That's another dynamic that people are ignoring.
If he was likely to prevail, they would cover him for the full 50.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, they don't believe he's likely to prevail. So they're not going to take that chance.
Now, earlier this week, his lawyers actually started the whining part of the defense, right?
Yes.
Which is, it's practically impossible. Yeah. It's practically impossible, right? So that's the term they use, right? Given the size of the penalty, right? They said on Monday, and I'm reading this from the New York Post, wink, wink, right? Trump's attorneys contended in a court filing that it wasn't feasible, quote, under the circumstances presented, close quote, to cough up that money, noting that a bond would cost 120% of the fine, potentially $557 million due to interest and appeals costs. His lawyers argued that such a price tag is unattainable and claimed that some 30 insurance companies would accept his real estate as wouldn't accept his real estate as collateral. They've also claimed that he lacks the cash flow to produce that kind of money, which leads me to this question. On numerous occasions, the former president and his mouthpiece counsel at this particular time, Alina Habba, has stated, he's got a lot of cash. He's a billionaire and a billionaire and a billionaire three times over and all that stuff. Now we find in partner ain't really got it like that. So the question is, smoke and mirrors, or did he over-leverage himself, or has he over-leveraged himself with all of his properties by keep borrowing on them, using them as collateral, that he ain't got it like that?
Well, you know, the Cushan colloquialism is that he fucked. obviously, you know why the insurance companies won't take the properties? Because the government got first dibs on that. Think about it.
Yeah.
He has enough property to cover that judgment. But that's like me giving you a mortgage on thing that somebody else has a mortgage on. I'm never going to get paid. And they know that the government has first dibs on the properties. As a matter of fact, Ms. James says that, General James says that she's about to file the writ of execution and Tony Moore had to tell me.
Precipice.
That's a word. I got to spell it out to you. Precipice.
Yeah.
But it's Latin. P-R-A-E, and then recipe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pronounced precipice. And that is where you direct the marshal what assets to seize.
But apparently something happened yesterday. She put a lien on his bill.
She already has the paperwork.
She already put a lien on properties in Westchester County.
There you go. That's the writ of execution there.
Wow.
And then the next thing would be prevent the property from going anywhere. And then when the writ of execution and the precipice go through, the marshal will actually go to the recorded deeds and replace the deed that's in the report, the recorded deeds, for a marshal's deed. And it would become the property of the court.
Now, let me ask this question. The electors say that certain floors of Trump Tower is owned by certain countries, right? What happens to those people who occupy, like they said, the 21st floor might belong to Saudi Arabia or something? What happens then? They just got a new owner? And they could stay.
Exactly. They have a new owner called the state of New York.
So they could remain on the floor and
Yeah, they could stay the building just as a new owner. Those buildings are co-ops.
Yeah.
Which, as you know, are huge in New York as opposed to condos. But those businesses, so all the comments, the entire building is owned by everybody. Not just and then the co-op client just sells you your actual unit. But all the common areas and stuff are owned, and even like the unsold apartments are owned by all the stakeholders, the members of the co-op. So there would just be another person in there along with the state of New York, which will replace the Trump administration as the, like, majority owner or whatever it is.
Wow. Well, I'm looking at an article where they say meet the notorious characters who call Trump Tower home, right? And and they go through. They say Donald Trump got from floor 66 through 68. Guido Lombardi, floor 62 to 63. Helen Ahmad, floor 51. Ernie Garcia, floors 48 through 49. Paul Manafort, you remember him? Remember that name?
Yeah, he does have a place there. Yeah,
he was floor 43, and the list goes on and on. So, hey, let me ask, they're speculating about how desperate Trump could get. Bankruptcy is an option, but he don't want to file for bankruptcy in the middle of a campaign, because now he gonna open himself to, wait a minute, you running for president and you can't even run your sweetie shop. Now, right? But with him though, it got a shameless side to hear though. He don't really care about being criticized though. But they say in this case, him being looked at as a whatever term you want to use, businessman, because you know this is an NPR station, right? That would pain him to no end, they say. Because he's promoted himself as being this great financial man and this great businessman. Look, we lose him again, right? So, you know, that's an issue there. Another thing came up where there was an interview with Michael Bloomberg, right? And this was from back in 2020, and he was talking about someone was interviewing him about his feud with Donald Trump, right? And unfortunately, he was saying, it was looking back at the 2016 election, and this is Michael Bloomberg talking in 2020, and he was saying that he had told the public that Trump was bad for the country, and all that stuff. And he was interviewed, so I'm pulling up his comment to see. Hold on a second there. To see where the Bloomberg clip. So you could hear how Bloomberg was taking shots at Trump from back in the day. Hold on a second. Right. Okay, you're back on the line now?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I want you to hear this quick interview, right? Of a reporter talking to Bloomberg about billionaires.
Personal thing, I said in Philadelphia, go back and look at the tape, Philadelphia 2016, I said he was not the right guy for the job. I don't know how early I had to do it to convince you it was nothing personal. It was just, he's the wrong guy. The way he treats people, the way he runs an organization, and the way he makes decisions is not good for this country.
Do you think people are interested in seeing two billionaires fight out over Twitter, or in the way that you guys seem to be going at it right now?
Two billionaires, who's the second one?
So in other words, right? In other words, fellow billionaires look like some of them might be enjoying what's taking place with Trump.
Oh, of course. Of course, because you know what? That, as we know, that's a very exclusive club. And I think they take umbrage at interlopers and imposters.
Dude, there are those, like this group, the Lincoln Project and all that stuff, they had mentioned that they had always looked at Trump as a fake billionaire. In other words, he may have all this property, but he ain't got no cash. Is that what's really bothering him now, that perception is actually being proved to be real in real time?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. He can't spin this nowhere or no how or no way. He is Trump is can't handle not being in charge of the narrative, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And here it is, things are happening around him, and he has zero control over it. And it's really driving him nuts.
But why you think with all of this, you know, he's been in the business, he's been in the public limelight for over 40 years. Yes, he had filed for bankruptcy back in the 90s, but then he had bragged about being the comeback kid and all that stuff. Had the Deutsche Bank and other entities lending him money over the years on multiple occasions. Why do you think at no point he didn't start, you know, banking that cash, man? I mean, I understand it's all that to be wearing a suit every day and looking the part and all that stuff, but perpetrating a fraud like that and don't having no cash, come on. So
that one
is laughable.
You know, it's about $5,000-$6,000 an hour to fly that plane, right?
Exactly, man.
An hour. And he likes to fly. He's flying commercial. He wants to move big shot. That's a big plane. That's not a business jet. That's a commercial airliner. Okay, he wants to act like he's a, you know, I don't know what, but it's, you know, Malcolm X said, chickens coming home to roost.
But I Tomato, you own all of these properties. You brag about Mar-a-Lago being 50 times more worth, 50 times more than they claim, the $18 million. Of course, he ain't telling the public that he designated as a social club, so he don't have to pay taxes on it,
right,
as a residence and only as a social club with the covenants and all that stuff. But I mean, when I heard him, I think they were asking for the judgment to be reduced down to $100 million. At that point, you know, he was struggling to put cash together.
Absolutely. That motion alone was embarrassing.
Now talk about this Chubb company that ponied up the $91 million for the E. Jean Carroll situation, yeah, and then having to write a letter to their clients to let them know, you know what I mean, we do this here, you know, but don't look at it with a jaundiced eye. And then a week later, they had to tell Trump, we can't help you up with the second one.
Right. The Chubb Group, you know, is a big group, do a lot of specialized insurance. One of the best known names in the business, like Lloyd's and that kind of stuff. But the Chubb Group does a lot of commercial stuff, including bonding for projects and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that this guy, you know, companies, they look at who they do business with, you know. They do, because if their clientele is always, you know, it's not in line, you know, predisposed to like having a cool customer like Trump, they have to answer to their clientele.
And the follow for that one wasn't linear at all. You know what I'm saying? So
no.
So that's interesting. We'll take a break. And come back and talk about a number of other different topics. Be back right after this.
Don't tell me we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on analysis, having some bush tea with Dwayne Henry. Okay, now bush tea we're drinking this morning, man.
I had ginger and mint and lemongrass.
I like that one. By the way, the Truth Social platform for Trump, they're supposed to be looking at going public this morning, I don't know, or today sometime. So,
yeah, that's correct.
So they're trying to raise some money, but
they get $4 billion for it.
Yeah, but again, that's on paper. Actual cash now, that's a whole different bag game. You know what I'm saying? So we'll see how that one pan out. But he could use some good news. And apparently, the way that particular arena is. There's a lockup period for 6 months. So actually,
that's another thing, yeah.
Actually accessing cash because that's what Monday's all about, cash, right?
Yeah.
Right? So we'll see.
Capitalization, market cap, and like you said, there's a period, and that's to prevent people from profiteering.
Correct. You know what I'm saying, because let's face it, you got some people in the marketplace that you simply can't trust. Anyway.
Yeah, and that's why they're in it.
Correct.
To do that.
Correct. So I digress. Now, let's move on to Congress. Apparently, Ken Buck, the congressman from Ohio, had previously said, this is my last term. And then 2 weeks ago, he said, not only is this my last term, I'm leaving on the 22nd of March. Right?
Right.
Today is the 22nd of March. So today is his last day. And the congressman, the conservative from Colorado, will hang up his gloves as a congressman today. However, he left with a little parting gift to the Republicans that actually benefited the Democrats, right?
Uh-huh.
Ken Buck became the first GOP member to sign the House Democrats' aide discharge position on Thursday. Just 1 day before he is set to retire from Congress. The discharge petition, formally launched early this month by House Democrats, is an attempt to force consideration of a Senate-passed $95 million foreign aid package, which includes $60 billion. Oh, I got to check out this number here because it got $95 million and then it says $60 billion. I believe it's $95 billion, right? Which includes $60 billion in aid for Ukraine. The petition, sponsored by Representative Jim McGovern, of a Democrat from Massachusetts, was up to 188 signatures as of Thursday. According to House clerk records, it requires 218 signatures to force consideration. So we got like four or five different stories in this particular issue right here. Number one, let me go back to the discharge petition. Right? This is where, when the speaker don't want to take up action on a Senate-passed legislation, members of the floor, X number of members of the floor, could force the speaker's hand.
Yes. Just that. It's used mostly in committees.
Yeah.
Where a committee member will try to kill a bill by just not putting it on the agenda, and you could do a discharge petition. That is, and the term discharge comes from, it discharges the committee from its duty of setting it on the agenda, orders it directly to the floor, and enforces the vote on the floor.
Okay.
That's really called discharge vote.
Okay, good. Now, this actual foreign aid package passed in the Senate 70 to 29, which is a solid vote. You know what I'm saying? With 22 Republicans voting in support of the legislation, right? So we'll see how that pans out. Now, as it relates to the politics, Ken Buck, you have Republicans who want to support Ukraine, but the president and a lot of his supporters in Congress don't want to support Ukraine and keep using the Mexico, U.S.-Mexico border as the argument for not supporting something outside of America when we have problems with our own border. What's your take on that? You're breaking up there. See if we can get closer to the phone.
The argument is pure nonsense. The truth of the fact is that, domestic policy and foreign policy are two different things.
Yes, sir.
And they really shouldn't offset each other. You know, this argument where we're saying we shouldn't do this foreign because we should do this domestically is pure nonsense. You know, and you hear people say that all the time, protectionists and isolationists. They say this all the time. They say, why are we over there getting this country this year and we got people here starving? Because you know what the answer to the question is? We can do both.
That's right.
It's not a trade-off.
Yeah.
We ain't going to do nothing on the border because of Ukraine. That's apples and oranges.
Basically, they're saying, well, you know, we walk in, right? But we don't know if we could chew gum at the same time. What kind of crazy is this?
Yeah, it's so... You know, I hate to use the term, but it's stupid.
it's an appropriate term. But there's another wrinkle to it as well, too. Look at what America has come to, where you have congressmen and women who are willing to sacrifice our standing up to Putin and Russia, right? By allowing him to do what he wanted to do to Ukraine. And by the way, they blew up an important bridge yesterday. Early this morning, because they're ahead of us, right? That could create significant flooding and all that stuff. A dam, I think it is over there, right? But here we are, where because President Trump is fond of Putin, Orban, and Lil Kim. That's what we're calling, right? The one from North Korea, right? Lil Kim, right? You have deep South Republicans who historically despise Putin more than anybody else. And because of their loyalty to Trump, they're willing to stand down and say, well, if that's what he wants, we're going with he. Wow.
The weird thing about the Republican, what's happening with Trump and the Republican Party, is that the party generally, both Democrat and Republican, mold the candidate, not the candidate mold the party.
Yeah.
And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The best candidates, generally speaking, in a primary are the ones who all the party activists and stuff. He takes on their issues. Trump has come in with his own issues and forced those issues onto the party.
So the question now...
The election denial, all this kind of nonsense. That's not something any party should be exposing.
But let me ask this question, because you bring up a good point, because the real issue now is the Republican Party is no longer the conservative party we know it to be. This is a MAGA party. Right.
This is not Barry Goldwater's party at all.
No, this is Barry Goldwater's party. So let me ask this question. What happens when there's no more Trump?
But that's why this whole thing is insane. You know, this is why it's crazy, Neville. Why Trump is 78, 79.
77, making 78. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not, like they'll say, here, me trying to kill the man off, but, you know.
Nothing lasts. Let me umbrella it like this. Nothing lasts forever.
There we go.
Yeah.
Especially with his death.
Yeah.
You know? So, suppose this man drop down tomorrow. What are you going to do?
All of a sudden, Nikki Haley becomes very attractive because, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, the goal is to stop Biden because he's doing too many things, you know, and we got to win, like you say, like when you reference Malcolm, by any means necessary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Biden got the power of the purse. Yesterday we read another story. 85 million. He cut a deal with Intel, right? Here we go. The Biden administration has reached an agreement to provide Intel with up to 8.5 billion in direct funding and 11 billion in loans for computer chip plants in Arizona, Ohio, New Mexico, and Oregon. Intel said the new funding, as well as additional investments, will create a combined 30,000 manufacturing and construction jobs. In other words,
those are very good jobs.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, man. I remember when we were in the Senate, right, and we had the bad news with respect to Hovensa, and mm-hmm. we were sitting there and we were doing the math, and they said, Neville, with Hess employees and contractors, the average salary is anywhere between 60,000 to 70,000, and that number, when you include the contract workers, not just Hess workers alone, is 2,000. Dwayne, when you do that kind of math, you're looking at $120 to $140 million, right, in taxable income, gone. So when you look at 30,000 jobs, manufacturing, right, and permanent, and whatever that dollar figure is. Right? Wow. Wow. On an annual basis? Now we know why people are getting politics and want to get the power of the purse string. When you have that ability. Yeah, man. Wow. That's going to be interesting. You're breaking up there again. Get a little closer to the phone. You're breaking up there again. Okay, go ahead. Repeat what you said because we didn't hear you. Kind of troubled.
About America first and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is America first.
Wow.
This is the real America first.
Yeah.
These types of policies is really America first. Not America first like Trump then believes it. This is America first because this is creating quality jobs for American citizens and an attempt to take back the chip market, the leadership in the chip market, which mm-hmm. we had for years until a few years ago.
All I know is...
Remember when Intel was everything? They used to say Intel inside?
Yes, sir.
And then all of a sudden, Intel fell off because we get these chips that came out of Singapore and Taiwan and stuff.
Correct. Correct. Because they over there, Indonesia, right? And China and all that stuff, they realized, wait a minute. You know, if we could tap into that market, you know, we got America who's so dependent on it, waiting to purchase our product. You know what I'm saying? So that's something to keep an eye on. By the way, the fundraising with this presidential election, the amount of money that's gonna be generated over the next 8 months gonna make your head spin. You know, doing.
It's crazy right now. What is it? We got $130 million watchers.
Yeah, and this is March, you know.
Right.
People ain't really start to get warm yet, reaching for the checkbook to start to get involved in this game.
I was waiting for Paradar and Jacob to call because today would have been a good day because
he want no part of this yet, though, man.
The Trump got like 40 million and he has 100 and something million. And also, to a link, the latest polls got Biden back up on top.
I tell you, he calling in today, right? The man that he praising, this big financial wizard and all that stuff. He want you to ask him for the money there. he want a part of that. Maybe he's still campaigning. Remember you were bragging about being in some...
He's on tour through the South during a campaign.
but we had some primaries this week, right? Had a primary in Georgia. Illinois, Arizona, and Florida. But the Democrats didn't have an actual primary. They just wrote off.
Florida gave it to him. Yeah,
yeah, Florida gave Biden the delegates. But that turned out to be somewhat of a mistake, because there were some other races, right, in play, like mayoral races and all that stuff. I'll make sure I pronounce that correctly. And had Biden been on the ballot, maybe Democrats may have done a little better in sort of like I think the mayor of Delray Beach and all that stuff went to a Republican. So that's the risk you run by not participating in the primary or in certain elections.
Right. I agree, yes.
Because if people ain't got a reason to come out because you don't win already, then that could impact down ballot races. And that's another aspect.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's another aspect that we got to look at going forward when we start to hone in on the election, because this is not a gubernatorial election cycle in 2024 here in the Virgin Islands, but we will be bringing on the Board of Elections leadership, Ms. Carolyn Fox. We'll start doing that maybe sometime in like May. Bring her on every Tuesday to give us an update. Maybe even a little before that, because registration and all that stuff is something that we got to keep an eye on. Hey, Dwayne, thanks for the Bush Tea discussion. We'll see what happens on Monday, man. Or we'll see what happens today, right, with the digital wall acquisition, and see if they generate money through shareholders investing on Wall Street this morning. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
Views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.